Hello, everyone, and welcome to this King Heroes Journey podcast. Live to both YouTube and Facebook, I have the immense honor of hosting Aaron Beattie today, who is a recovery coach. He has a really amazing, powerful story. Before I turn it over and get him to introduce himself in his own words, I'll just say hello to Chester, and Miguel is here, and Steve is here. Super good. I'm glad the party is beginning. And if you haven't seen one of my King Heroes Journey podcasts yet or heard one of them, it is, by the way, a podcast, so you can pick it up on Spotify and iTunes and Breaker and all that, those places. Hello, Eric. Hello, Sue. I love seeing you guys all the time. This is so great. So this podcast is for strong men and about strong men, but also very much for the women who take a lot of comfort. I'm putting my hand up in knowing that there are strong men out there doing their thing. You know, the way that the world has gone, it's interesting that I started this podcast before things went totally sideways in the world. And now I feel like it couldn't be more relevant. It is time to hold our strong men as high as we can, because they're the ones getting out there on the front line and doing the, you know, whether it's warrior or whatever intense kind of work that doesn't come as naturally to the feminine side, then it's time to really get behind them. So, Mr. Snake Jones, thank you so much for joining me. I can't help calling you Snake Jones. I'm sorry, because that's how I see your name on YouTube. Aaron Beattie.
That's okay. You can call me Snake.
Okay.
How you doing?
I'm so good.
As well. Yeah. So thanks. That was a good introduction. You did mention me as a recovery coach. That was a title I had for a short time in the treatment field, but generally I'm just an alcoholic. I identify as an alcoholic because it's a self-identified illness. It works that way for me. It just so happens that this week, June 3rd, was my 9-year sobriety date.
Oh, amazing.
It's a different audience. Generally, I'm used to a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or something like that, or an NA meeting or a HA meeting, which is Heroin Anonymous. I'm really comfortable in detoxes and treatment centers and stuff like that. So this is a bit different of an audience. And I know that we've talked about this before. I do see myself as the hero's journey is for real for me. I looking back, I really thought I was living a movie. I mean, it got strange there for a while. And with the introduction of your work and discoveries of other people's works, like when Crow Triple Seven did his hero's journey, Joseph Campbell and whatnot, I started beginning to see that there was something to this hero's journey. And I really appreciate your work, Beth, a lot. And really helped me, discern a lot about myself and what's going on. And it gives me great meaning to my own personal life and others. Mm-hmm. So hopefully in this interview, I get to share with everyone else my, message of courage, strength, and hope. It's hopefully you lead me in the right direction. I'm used to more of a different platform. So I don't know where you want to take it.
Well, I got a bunch of questions for you. So you're in good hands this way. The first one, do you want to just tell us your story, which is honestly so powerful? When I heard it, I was completely blown away. I knew at that time I had to host you for this interview. You and I ended up going down a little bit of a different path in the meantime, and here we are now, which is actually probably more interesting even given what's going on in the world to hear the context where you've come from.
Well, I'll start off with my definition of recovery. It comes right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's to be recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. And that was a big deal for me early on. I see today, after 9 years, that everyone's in recovery from something, or they want to be. And that's that, it's seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You know, hopelessness is despair. And to be in that position, you know, there's a myriad of avenues that can take you there. When it comes to alcoholism or addiction, some people term it as, I see it as a blessing. It's a gift. You know, this is what launched me on this course. Alcoholism began for me at an early age. It was, it began for me when I was born. You know, my father, he was an alcoholic for a time. You know, it's not really abnormal for an average American family to either have a family member who's alcoholic or something like that. And so that was my introduction to alcoholism. As a teenager, after doing a lot of step work and self-searching and just, you know, many years of looking at it, I could see some key moments in my life. I think, it was really awesome. I had made a post on Facebook. This must have been September or November, where I just put out a little bit of my experience when me and some friends had skipped school back at the age of, I was 13. They were 14, 15. We skipped school to go to a park where I knew of a cliff where there was a cave so we could smoke. And because we did that, we actually came up to that very spot where a boy, age of 18, had within the hour had jumped off in a suicide attempt.
Oh my God.
We found that boy and we saved his life. Me? I was already at that point. Public school was one of the most miserable experiences of my life. It just didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, marijuana and stuff like that it made sense. You know, it was good. And it actually, if it wasn't for that joint and that desire to go out there and smoke that joint, we wouldn't have found that kid. But, wow. It wasn't long after that, you know, I found myself in DYS, which is Division of Youth Services. My parents had gotten divorced and I had been put into a boy's home, juvenile detention. Nothing pretty serious. There was one event, which I wrote, you know, it's just too intense. And, that I kind of see that as my trauma journey, where I was launched into that course. And, at a young age, 18, I had my first child, met my wife, my current wife today. We've been together 23 years.
Wow.
And it's the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Mm.
And we had my first child. And at that same year, another trauma occurred, which was an altercation I had with St. Louis County Police, where it wound up, the outcome of it was me, it beat me near death. It really did. And this was a turning point, and I could tie this in with our current events and what we're talking about today. You know, we used to have a small town police force. When I came back from the boys' home, we had St. Louis County Police. They had gotten rid of the Fenton Police and incorporated. Boy, these guys, they were jackbooted and mean young men. And, I didn't think much of it, really, until the worst case scenario happened. I can look back on it today. I'm not a victim or anything like that. You know, there were some things that I did, but, that sent me even deeper into trauma. So alcohol and drugs really made sense for me at that time. Mm-hmm. They did. I see it in a lot of other individuals as well. Everyone's trauma is a little different. But, it'd be 10 years later where I found myself, my famous statement is broken homeless out in L.A., Skid Row. I had a 10-day-old baby back at home and my two other children. And the way we like to coin it, I was just badly mangled. Fortunately for me, I had a cousin who lived out in L.A., someone that our family kind of lost almost 20 years prior. He went out to California. Very talented musician and whatnot. He's currently living his dream now. He's acting and doing stuff out there in West Hollywood. But I gave him a call. My father had pulled me out of a motel room. I was.
We just lost you, Aaron. I'm not sure if you can still hear me, but just so you know, you might. Yeah, we lost you. Aaron has a little bit of a crazy connection, but hello, Ice Cream Day. Thank you so much for coming. McBo, Eric is here twice. You're a split personality, multitasker. FE is here. So great. I'm glad you guys could join. it's a lovely thing, and it'll be worth the wait for Aaron to come back on. There's some kind of a, maybe it's my weather. It's been just super, super windy here, like day after day after day. I don't know if everybody else is having wind everywhere, but it's kind of a strange one. Probably some thunderstorms coming. But yeah, Aaron's life is actually really remarkable, and here he comes again. Hello, Aaron, can you hear me?
Yeah, where did I fall off at?
Good point. I was just talking. So you were just grateful that, you said that you needed drugs and alcohol in that day, and then your dad was coming to the hotel room, and I think that's where we lost you.
Oh, yeah. So I missed the birth of my son, actually. That was May 21st, 2011. Mm. I missed the birth of my son, and any alcoholic or addict will understand binges and the obsession and whatnot, and just that kind of hell. I went out with a paycheck and didn't come home until the next day. And my son had been born. He had been born premature. I think today is actually his due date. June 7th was his due date, but he was born on spring equinox, May 21st. My young son. For me, that was that's what did it. You know, it would be another 10 days for my dad pulled me out of a motel room. God bless him. He passed away in 2018. But
sorry.
In his desperation, he threw me on a train with a one-way ticket out to L.A. and somehow managed to get me on that train. There's amazing people in this world, and I met a few of those on the train. I managed to make it through the 3 days without leaving. And did I talk about my cousin?
No, you didn't.
Or did I? Okay, so my cousin, who we lost about 20 years prior, he had headed out to L.A. to chase after his dreams of being a musician and an actor and whatnot. And, he just disappeared out there. I think a few months prior to me heading that way, and this might have even been where I got the idea. I don't recall. Neither does he. But he popped up on Facebook. We kind of reconnected. And on my way out to California, I gave him a call. I said, "Hey, I'm coming down." And he goes, "Yeah, when?" I said, "I'll be there tomorrow." And he hung up the phone. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that, because it turns out that he was an alcoholic too.
Okay.
And Evan had gotten sober out there. See, this, what he had done for himself opened the door for me. And I had no idea. I didn't go out there to get sober, to get recovery, to have a hero's journey or anything, you know?
Yeah.
I was on a train, badly mangled, but my cousin picked me up, and he said he knew what to do with me. He was going to take me somewhere. You know, on my mind, all I wanted was a drink. Somehow, miraculously, he kept me from getting a drink, and he took me to a place called Charlie Street Detox, or the First Step Men's House of Costa Mesa, California. It is one of the oldest men's all-volunteer detox in the country. It was opened in 1958. It's an amazing place. He took me there looking for a bed for the night. Unfortunately, I didn't have any money, and my dad wasn't going to help me anymore. Thank God he cut me off. I didn't know anybody. My cousin didn't have the money. And I didn't have the money to get into a sober living, and I just didn't meet the requirements to be at Charlie Street. The way that place is set up is they have, there's 18 beds, because I worked there for 2 years, ended up being a volunteer. And they have a back porch where anyone can come. It's open door, in and out, and all walks of life are in and out of that place all day long. And someone had overheard that was staying at Charlie Street that I was from St. Louis, and I was looking for a place to go, and I couldn't find one. So what he did is he gave my cousin and myself the number for a man named John. Turns out 16 years prior, John had been pulled out of a motel room and thrown on a plane with a one-way ticket by his father in St. Louis and sent out to California in October. And this ended up being my first mentor. Like, generally, you don't just take a guy off the street. It's just not fair to him. I had a detox to go through, which could be from 14 days to a month. You know, that's the physical detox. It's pretty gnarly.
Ouch.
And But they took a chance with me. Also, some men came together, some mysterious men, and paid my first 2 weeks' rent.
Mm.
And I was taken to that place. It was actually a Friday. So the recovery house, it's no longer open. It was very new. I think it was 3 or 4 years old. And it was run by another alcoholic. The two come out of a house just like that. And he set it up somewhat similar. But when you get there, you know, you're given a list of 18 rules. The 19th rule, which I didn't notice, and I wish I would have, but I learned, was more rules would be added. So I had 2 years living in that house, and that experience, which was wonderful for an alcoholic such as myself. But they knew what to do with me. They put me into a meeting that night, my first AA meeting. They gave me a bed, which was a top rack and a 8-man wet room, we called it. And that night I began to detox. It was pretty intense. It was something I'll always remember, which is kind of the best way to do it. They gave me a routine at that house. You know, that John guy ended up being my sponsor. Yeah, it was a lot of direction. But the one thing that was, you know, I have a few axioms I use in my recovery coaching, and one of them is, you know, you won't ever hear me say really that my recovery. That was a firework. Sorry about that. And
okay, good.
My recovery isn't. It is.
No, I'm glad he told us that was fireworks, because that would be a little freaky now. From what I understand, he was on the front lines yesterday. Let's make sure to ask him if someone can remind me in the chat. He was on the front lines yesterday of some of the riots going on there in Missouri. So, well, you guys are hearing so good, good so far. He sounds really clear to me. I'm assuming it's clear for you guys as well. Too bad we can't have the video on, but here he comes again. There you are. We can't hear you. We don't have the, there you are. I hear the audio.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could keep your camera on if you want.
I'm only worried it'll mess up the broadband. You think it's on my end or yours?
I think it's more on your end.
Yeah. I don't have internet anymore.
Okay.
Using my phone.
Okay, right. Got it.
Got rid of it for the time being, just mm-hmm. for the family. Where did I leave off?
So your cousin became your sponsor, did you say? And
it's dropping off. Must be dropping off way ahead before it lets me know. So, did I make it to California? Did I make it to the recovery house yet? Did you hear that part?
Yes, you made it to California. And yeah, if you'd like, turn your camera off if that conserves bandwidth. Absolutely.
Let's do some technical. I'm going to turn off the video real quick because we're getting robot-y again.
Okay.
Hey, Eric, what's up? I see his comment.
Yeah, lots of good people in the chat. We've got Claire and Eric and Ice Cream Day and Effie and Travis. Your buddy is here. Veronica is here. McBo, Four Leaf Clover, Joanne Hammond, all the good ones. Sergey, thanks so much for coming, you guys. So you want to go on and finish your story? Yeah.
Oh, man.
Bear with us. We're having a little bit of a technical issue this evening. Who knows? Maybe it's the wind around here. I'm not sure. It's been going well otherwise. Can you guys hear me okay? Can you let me know? And here comes Aaron again. Looks like there's three of us now. Hey, Aaron, can you hear us or me?
Yeah, I can hear you this time.
Okay, excellent. Okay, very good. Clear, excellent. Thank you from the chat there. So, yeah, when you reached the treatment center and you went through some hellish detox,
Hold on a second. I think I lost you again.
Okay.
Let me try something.
Okay. Bear with us. Yeah, Travis says the sound is good. We're getting good feedback that the sound is all working. So that's awesome. And anybody out there have their own recovery journey, by the way?
I think they do.
Yeah, exactly. In a way, most people do, but you know, at different ends of the spectrum. Yeah, Eric says the problem's probably on your end and that I sound fine. So that's good. Good to know.
Okay. You know, back to the definition of recovery, for a while there, you know, while you're going through it, I guess we can definitely, you know, that's our common bond, Beth, with your cancer journey. And I see it in so many other people with different things. You know, yeah. I like to share this story because it's a recovery story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be alcoholism or whatnot. It's the alchemy of it.
Exactly. It's the transformation that,
yes.
You know, it's almost that there aren't really a whole bunch of problems because we've got this diagnostic world that has, you know, how big is that DSM or whatever it's called? But really there's one problem going on. What would you say that is? No pressure. Maybe not hearing me. All right. Yeah. So Travis said, I met my wife and daughter and didn't want to be drunk all the time anymore. Wow. Wow. Amazing. That's so beautiful that you've used that opportunity, Travis. I love that. FV says, I've got plenty of trauma, as does everyone. That's the thing. We're all in the same boat here, right? It's almost in a way, without that trauma, you almost have to go get it, believe it or not. And here comes Aaron again. Hello, hello. Can you hear us, Aaron?
Oh, that's Travis is here. What's up, yeah. Travis? I'm back.
There he is. Yep. Yeah, he's got a good story of recovery too.
Oh, darn it. I'm going to move around a little bit if you can still hear me. Try and find a better... This is probably not going to happen.
Okay, well, we'll just take it easy. And if we need to reschedule to hear all of the story and have all the questions that I have for you, then that's no problem with me if it works for you. And yep, everybody's got trauma. It's just one of those things about right from the get-go, if you've looked into the birth world at all, it's horrendous. Craziness going on there at the hospital. I was fortunate to have many women in my world that were in the alternative birth world. And they would tell me stories that I didn't really want to hear, but in the meantime, they need to be heard because you can see how intense the trauma is. You know, there's a difference between, say, the, you know, everything is suffering, says the Buddha, but what is also the definition of unnecessary suffering? There's a lot of unnecessary suffering in this world. And, you know, we that's the part that we can have a lot of control over and start helping people to really just recognize where are we playing into this? Like what, you know, I don't want to criticize any woman that wants to go to the hospital and birth, but you are signing up for trauma for yourself and for your child and probably for your family and everybody around you. There's the trauma is built in, unfortunately, to that system. So, you know, again, don't use it as a chance to beat yourself up or anything like that, but life starts out. And it, even if it weren't the unnecessary trauma, there are the normal traumas. Like, you know, my son was born screaming and to a screaming mom. Didn't matter how natural and how beautiful that birth was. And it was in water and it should have been so romantic. Sue says, me too. Yeah. Then, you know, it's life is a drama. It's a serious drama. So intense. The two big ones, being born is intense and dying is intense. And then everything else in between is intense, right? And then you throw in psychopathic leadership worldwide. And, you know, what kind of, how would this world look like? What would it look like if we didn't have all that going on? Am I an empath? I think everybody is empathic. I think everybody has, we all have the potential capacity for empathy, absolutely. And I have a little bit of a problem with the empath movement, you could almost call it, out there. But we have Aaron back. Hey, Aaron, how's it going?
Hey, there's a ghost in the machine. I got good reception.
Okay, well, if you're up for it, let's keep rolling with it. And we'll keep going until you're tired of this game and maybe reschedule too if we can't get through it.
Okay. I don't know. I see Travis there. Because I met my wife and daughter and didn't want to be drunk all the time anymore. Yeah, me too. You know, that had been going on for quite a while. So when a mentor appears, you know, I can look back and I had refused the call many, many a times. You know, I understand that.
Yeah.
This time I got a little bit of extra help, you know. To be amongst those men at the recovery house, it's where I find my higher power. I could see that the group of people, kind of like what's going on now in the YouTube community, we're all just brought together in this amazing way. That was my experience at the recovery house. My sponsor, who ended up being John, basically just with his own experience, eliminated every excuse I had, because the journey for the next 22 months at the recovery house was pretty intense. It was, they provided me discipline, at the recovery house. I attended, I think it was 15, 16, 17 meetings a week. There are rules at the house. There's only one book allowed. That was a big book. And, you know, they call it a program. I got programmed. I was blessed that these men understood that book and worked only out of it. And, you know, they set me on that course of action. My mentor was always on me about helping the newcomer. And back to, I don't know if you guys caught that part. My first conversation with this man was a Saturday. I'd received a call from my uncle, who's a very important man, but I'd not heard of. I was, you know, when it comes to family and alcoholism, it's quite a shame. But he called me and he said this simple statement first, that a journey of 10,000, a journey, getting nervous here. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. That meant a lot to me. And then I proceeded to talk to John Long, who's my, God bless him. He knew how to talk to me, but again, with his own experience. The man was armed with the facts about himself as an alcoholic, which at the time I didn't understand. He was armed with the facts about me. He knew exactly how to talk to me. But he said this very interesting, right? It was a very interesting introduction. He said, "Aaron, you have a head that lies you and it wants you dead, but it will settle for drunk or loaded. It'd be better for you to carry the thought of 'Thy will be done, thy will not mine be done,' as much as you could think. And I'm and follow the direction I give you," basically, which was a lot. You know, that routine at the house was designed to keep us busy. Because I got the experience of just me and that thinking, which was my alcoholism. The big book is pretty simple. If you work out of it, it tells you what the problem is. Problem centers in the mind. It tells you what the your purpose is just to stay sober, help others. And it tells you what the object of the program is, that 12 steps, is to have that spiritual experience, which is generally what alcoholism is, I see. It's a spiritual malady. But at that house, I did follow direction, just out of sheer desperation. I had the experience of going out there. They closed the doors at the recovery house from 6 a.m. and they didn't open it till 4 a.m. So you're out there on the streets, they're looking for a job where you're working. And it took me 2 months to find a job, but during that time in 2011, I got the experience of what thinking, those thoughts, those alcoholic thoughts, and where I'm at today on that. Is that Jerry Marzinski, James True type of experience. You know, those thoughts didn't originate for me. It really didn't. And without getting too in depth right away, just want to put that out there for everybody. That's where I'm at today. That was going on. I would get back to the recovery house exhausted. And my dear sponsor, you know, I check in with them every day at 6 p.m. on the money. If I missed it, it was 6:01, he would either hang up on me or not answer and tell me to try again tomorrow. But he could tell I'd come home exhausted. You know, I had all the world's problems, right? Where my main problem was Aaron couldn't keep a drink out of his face. But he could tell. And he's like, how many times did you say that will be done today? Oh, I don't know, 5. Let's try 50 today. Mm. And you know what? I did. And it got a little better. Mm. And you know what? After a few months, I got a job. After a few months, I got some commitments and some meetings. They immediately put me on that step work. I worked a 4-step, fifth step. First time, second time, a year later, I did one, which was pretty profound. You know, I went through all those steps. After a few months, I watched the recovery house. My description of what it was like, I was in an 8-man room. They kept me there for a year. It's like a revolving door of alcoholics and addicts, all walks of life, coming in and out. And after a few months, all these young guys started coming in. And you know what? They weren't alcoholics. They were, but they weren't drinking. They were using heroin. And these were young guys. So, again, I think just out of sheer desperation and trying to follow direction, I tried to help them. And, you know, it took many years to really dial that in. What I found to be most helpful, really, was what my sponsor's direction was to be a good example of the program. You know, in my mind at that time, I really couldn't fathom what lifelong sobriety was, and that's what they were constantly instilling in us there. But I could see it in the young guys. So I kind of, it was like my sacrifice daily. It was, you know, I might not make it, but these guys could. And they tricked me. They took all of everything they told me that they were teaching me in the discipline seriously. And you know what? Those young guys saw me and they took it seriously too. So where do I go from there? I mean, after what I've explained so far, the recovery house was very disciplined. The 19th rule being more rules will be added was my experience. They were always adding new rules for me because as a 30-year-old man who running on self-will, practically feral, and, you know, detoxing for me took a long time. You know, they made up a lot of rules. I was trying to get around everything to know where we are. But that year came around, and the whole time, again, never in my mind would I ever be able to return home and see my children or anything like that. That was just not an option.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is because, honestly, the alcoholism and all that stuff and going through all that, what got me the most was I was hurting my family. And that's what I found out in my step work. That second, fourth, and fifth step I did with my sponsor. And I hear this in meetings a lot, and it's very effective because it's true. You know, it was like 2 hours, it seemed like. I had poured my heart out on this one. My sponsor, I think he just got tired of it. And he's like, hey, do you notice anything here? Anything repetitive, anything common that you're sharing about? And I was like, yeah, it seems like all the people I did everything to and I hurt were my family, friends, and people who were trying to help me my whole life. That was my big revelation. You know, it turns out that a lot of people have been trying to help me, you know, in their best way. And that was profound. That was, not most of them were equipped to help me with my situation. And, there I was. So that was a big one. But again, back to the family. At a year, I got a call from my wife. Let me go back a little bit. My best plan at the recovery house, if I wasn't planning my escape from that very disciplined, intense experience, I was fighting for my bed to stay there. And the reason I would fight for that bed was the newcomer. I really was. And the fear of the outside world. But with that plan, I had prior to that, I was a third generation union pipe fitter, and I had acquired a pension. Well, my best plan was at that time, it's 6 months sober, 7 months sober, was to cash in on my pension, take that money, and do a terrible thing. And that was, you know, fortunately, that did not happen. I received the check in the mail. It was a little over $6,000. I looked at it and I thought, I'm a goner. This is it. And that night after a meeting, I heard some amazing experiences from other alcoholics, other men who have worked this hero's journey. And I'd presented that check to the manager of the house and my sponsor. And I said, help me. I didn't know at the time, but that very thing had taken out more alcoholics and addicts before me than anything else. And they actually didn't really know what to do. I found that out later. So what they had directed me to do was give the money to my estranged wife back in St. Louis, which I was just stunned by. I was like, what? And I did. My wife, Jenny, decided to fly down to California at a year sober and visit me with my son, my sons and my daughter, which was a big deal. I was terrified of seeing them because I was afraid I'd hurt them. That wasn't the case. It was a very beautiful experience. My father came too. It was odd because I didn't recognize him. I didn't know at the time that I was changing so much, that it was me that was different, not them. Although they got better too. When I was away and they had some peace in their life, things got better. That's just how it is for us alcoholics. And the test in that hero's journey at that time was, with that money, I was fully intended on returning home with my family. And my sponsor's direction, that last day, when I went to the airport with my wife and children, he's like, Aaron, you're not ready. Give your wife the money. Tell her you love her. And sometime soon you might be ready, but it's just not now. And he gave me direction to put them on the plane and go directly to Charlie Street Detox and read a chapter with the new guy. Which, of course, I said, yeah, right, that's not going to happen. There's no way I'm going to do that. But I did. And when we talk about aperture, my aperture was wide open. Felt like my heart was being ripped out of my chest, but I followed that direction. Went directly to Charlie Street, and two men followed me back to the recovery house. And so did you. It would be another 10 months. Wife and children decided to come back down. I was still not in the place where I would ever return home. And the very reason was I could not ensure that I would be able to stay sober, which was still a bit foolish and immature, but the men at the recovery house knew where I was going on this journey. They knew I'd get there, just didn't know when. And when the time was right, they would tell me I was ready. Well, the second time Jenny and the children came, you know, I had to return home. And it was because of that book, that spiritual foundation I built, the discipline and all that, I realized that everything that I had learned at the recovery house about myself, those men, and this amazing foundation I had built in recovery, there would be no reason why I cannot take that back home to St. Louis. That was my big moment. And I hopped on a train and 3 days back home. Now, there are some other things. Back in California, that recovery house was very good at all the men that were local at getting them on the course or cleaning up a lot of wreckage. It just so happened that I had like 12 outstanding warrants for my arrest, a lot of wreckage back here at home. And the men at the recovery house, when they got there, immediately began cleaning that stuff up. So I actually had to start from scratch after 2 years. When I came back home to California, got a lot of direction. I had many, many friends who were still addicts. I had to turn myself into jail. I was able to do that, I don't think I'm going to share that. What I will share is about the conditions here back at home. Out in California, we didn't have the heroin we did here. I was shocked when I returned home. California, you can throw a rock at a sober living, a treatment center, and all that amazing recovery out there. I mean, I know a lot of people give California crap for reasons, but when it comes to recovery, they have amazing recovery out there. Old school's good stuff. Out here, not so, you know, because of the direction I got from my sponsor and the discipline and all that stuff and the men at the recovery house, my fellowship, my family, you know, I was able to take what I learned there. And I found myself in a position, I'm like on the front line. And what I had was the elixir of life. People needed it. They wanted it. And I was just doing it. And wouldn't you know it, you know, a lot of good things started unfolding. So let's talk about the hero's journey.
Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely. Yeah, the thing about the hero's journey is that it's not enough to just slay your own demons and, you know, recover and mend your family and mend your ways. And we lost Aaron for a moment, so let's see. We'll just wait for that. But yeah, the hero's journey, it's that one that if you get to the other side of stuff and you get your healing, you get your family back together, you get your career back together, you start making money, being part of society, it's not enough, right? You actually have to turn around and start helping others. And it's like you don't get to keep your recovery or keep your healing or keep your freedom unless you give it away, right? And that's, I can totally relate to that. That's anytime I've ever learned something in my life, I instantaneously want to turn around and give back. If I learn a good tool, I want to teach that tool. If I discover a great resource of some kind, I want everybody to have that great resource. It's nature's way. And it keeps you in that place of humbleness because you keep connecting with people who are in a place, you know, struggling or suffering where you used to be. And it keeps reminding you, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. So, yeah, what a beautiful message. It's always an interesting comment, Effie, about that stuff brings you down. And, you know, it's when people are sharing the challenges that they haven't overcome. That's when it can actually be really almost devastating to people, especially if they're struggling and they haven't overcome yet, then you end up all lost together. But the beautiful potential. Oh, let me see. Aaron, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
You sounded good too.
Sorry. I think
no,
you were
the fault.
Okay.
This
yeah.
Is making it interesting.
Okay.
I have to. I'm reading the comments. They're great.
Yeah. Awesome stuff. So, do you want to pick it up where I'm leaving off there?
Oh, I heard some of what you're saying, and you know, yes. I mean, I was flowing real good there too. It's 9 years of this, you know. I think I was trying to pick up on the hero's journey.
Yes.
Did I mention before how I felt like I was living in movies?
No.
Okay. So that was been in my experience right off the bat. We used to joke at the recovery house. Fight Club was a big movie for us. We didn't have any TV there. Every now and then we would watch a movie, you know, when we had the time, which was very rare. And I'd head down to the Goodwill and grab a VHS tape or something, 50 cents. I think I brought in like Fight Club. That was a good one. Groundhog's Day was a very popular one. Because with a routine like that, we, you know, and we used to joke about it.
Are you still there, Aaron?
A brother of mine said, you know, we used to joke about Fight Club. Like, you know, maybe one day we'll make soap and open a recovery house or something of our own. Ha ha ha. Well, I'd mentioned earlier returning home to St. Louis and seeing that the treatment centers and the sober livings weren't here and the need was so great. That happened. I'm living this movie. I already lived the Fight Club type Groundhog's Day at the recovery house, went through all that. Here I am back home and reunited with my family. And just on a whim to try and help others, you know, I was getting all these addicts that were off the streets and nowhere to go. You know, there was sober livings available. You would have had to pay the first 2 weeks rent or whatnot. Me and my wife decided to start making soap. from scratch, lye soap, and we made our first batch. Well, one more thing. I accidentally, with my mother-in-law, who's actually trying to call her, the brother-in-law is a heroin addict. I had no idea when I returned back home what was really going on. My dear mother-in-law and my father-in-law were going through this. My brother-in-law's addiction, his heroin addiction, and me trying to find a meeting here back at home because I didn't have a routine desperately. My mother-in-law was attending this movie, this meeting called HOPE, which was Help for Opiate Addicts Parents Exists. And I didn't intend to go to this meeting. Instead, I was just looking for a meeting myself, and they were at a certain hospital here, a psych ward. I accidentally walked into this meeting, this HOPE meeting, and I was stunned. I seen all these moms and dads desperate for some kind of support or help with their children. And here I am sitting there not expecting it at all. But they were obsessed with trying to figure this out and all this stuff. And I was able to bring some sanity, some solution, and be a good example of recovery in that meeting. And that launched me on a whole new journey. And this ties to the soap thing. So our first batch of soap, and I think it was a HOPE parent's child were trying to get into detox. They bought our soap. We made right off the bat, we made like $200. Mm-hmm. It just so happened to be enough to get this kid into treatment. And off we went. Me and my wife were making soap. We called it Project HOPE St. Louis. And it was great. It was great. I did that for 2 years, a little more. It ran its course. But it's funny because I can go all the way back to that first 2 weeks that someone paid for my rent out of Charlie Street. Those mysterious, awesome people. And here I am doing the same thing.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that was very creative, very original. So those HOPE parents taught me a lot. I kind of look at you, Beth, as a HOPE parent. I do. I'm very comfortable with you because of those moms and dads in those meetings. You know, they became surrogate mothers and fathers to me for quite a while, and they still are. Mm. That meeting started to grow, and you know, we opened up the recovery house, a new one here in 2016. It was great. I had a lot of friends. We had already experienced already a lot of deaths. You know, a lot of friends already had succumbed to this illness from heroin overdose or alcoholism. And my drive was to provide for them what I was provided. It was that simple. And that's what put me in the position to be at the recovery house when it opened. That first month, we had 20-bed facility. I filled it. I literally filled it.
Wow.
Yeah. And my friend, my lifelong friend who was there, my brother, Matthew, he was there when my children were born, you know, and neither of us planned on being the addicts we ended up being or the alcoholics, but here we were. Mm-hmm. That was very, he was at the bottom of his heroin addiction. He was one of the first guests at the recovery house. He died a month later. He died a month later. It was an accidental overdose, and that set me on another course.
Oh, boy.
You know, it was that year was a series of heroin overdoses. It was ridiculous. It really got bad there for a moment. And a lot of us were frenzied from it. It's just one death. I don't care. Just one death. And this is America today. Everyone knows someone who's succumbed to this illness to some degree, whether it's alcoholism, opiates. I know about 20 or more. I can't count anymore.
Exactly.
And it got overwhelming. Turns out I was experiencing compassion fatigue. I learned that later in my recovery coach training and whatnot. I had been brought back into the union, which was my previous trade. It was my father's trade. I spent that time building a really close relationship with my father, my family. I bought my first home, did a lot of these things. And after couple years, I went back into the treatment field. That meant a pay cut, all that kind of stuff.
We lost Aaron, which has been happening, but he should be back in a minute. Such a fascinating story. Thanks all you guys for being here. This is wonderful. Eric said, I had one like a father help put the comet up. I had one like a father to me when I went through hell. That's amazing that we had that. Here comes Aaron again. So much love. Tearing up now. Just reading a comment, Aaron, someone, Eric was saying he had a father. He had one like a father to him when he went through hell. So much love. He's tearing up. People we need so need, people we so need awesome. To overcome. Take my hand should be normal. Anyway, get the spirit of that. Yeah. Yeah. And yes, Eric, I am okay. Totally okay. Thank you. And yeah, we're really appreciating hearing your story, Steve said. Absolutely, Aaron. Can you
see? Yeah, I'm back. I'm kind of breaking up. I think you'll clear up in a second.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can totally hear you. It's perfect.
Oh, yeah, you're putting it. I think it takes a minute for it to load up or something.
Right.
Get on a flow and then it drops.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's 2019. We're at 2016. All this time, see, let me go ahead and introduce into my journey the YouTube community. It's been, it had been there since day one.
They're
Neil Kramer, Milt Fabregas, Freeman Fly, you know,
yeah,
all Freeman. These YouTube channels. Exactly like yours, Beth. Like right now, there is a guy on a bus who's down and out. Just forming his fellowship. He's getting put on the path and he's listening to this podcast right now. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my experience. Man, YouTube community's been there in so many different ways. It's not even funny. Right at 2016, while that was going on, I remember I'd left the recovery house to go up to see a Neil Kramer seminar for my first time. I really feel like I cheated this whole time with Neil Kramer and all those before. Name, you know, I really did. I had the edge. I was doing this thing. I was getting a lot of direction, but I was not doing it alone. You know, even Mark Passio, I went to his seminar in 2014, the Streetwise Recovery with my 13-year-old son, and that was good.
Excellent. But
yeah, I could see how far I'd come in my growth from that one. But anyway, so I went to that and. More fellowship, proximity of fellowship. These things are good. If any of you ever get an opportunity to do such a thing, please. It wasn't easy. I made a lot of sacrifices. It was scary, you know, driving 2 days out to upstate New York. And, you know, I haven't looked back since. I made the last four of those. You know, that's where I met James True. Yeah, it was beautiful. Andrew Kaufman. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So... I just wanted to, yeah, the YouTube community. With that, and 2016, by 2018, I went back into the treatment field. So I have a reputation. You know, I get my guy to detox no matter what. People will know me for that. There's nobody I won't work with. There's not a dope house door I won't kick in and do what I do.
So
good. Yeah.
What a great spirit. So
it was different this time because in the treatment field, working for a corporation, I was shocked. A lot of those men that I had brought in and came in 2016 in the recovery house were now working in these treatment centers. And they almost had it, but they were very limited in what they could do. They were very limited in what they can do. I was put on a... emergency opiate response team, which was basically doing something I've already been doing. Every time there was a overdose, the ER room or whatever participating hospital would call me or another recovery coach, and we had an hour response time. And the idea was to get into the ER room and get these guys with grant money that had been granted, which they lost, of course, and get them into treatment. Very effective, 90% of the time. And, I watched them kill that. I watched all the politics in there. I seen some very shocking things. And it was disheartening. I eventually got fired from that for doing what I do. I work with anybody. They tried to tell me I couldn't work with somebody. They didn't like the fact that I always sat and down in the detox area. They gave me an office and just didn't find any use for it. I had a lot of meetings I missed and whatnot. And thanks to Stefan Verstappen, after that experience, you know, he guided me through that. He gave me some really good advice. Things that I could see, but I really couldn't see. So, I mean, whenever you have an elder in your presence, you're fortunate to talk to someone like Stefan. You know, you guys are able to remind us of where we're at, things we already know inside. But, you know, when you're in that and it seems like everybody else is doing something different, you want to fall away from your path. You know, guys like Stefan really put me back on it. And I really appreciate him for that.
So good. Yeah. I just want to quickly point out, Steve was saying he was at Mark's in 2014, Sacred Masculine Lecture, and may have already met you there.
Oh, yeah, Mark. Oh, Steve. That was a good one. I was in the middle, me and my 13-year-old son.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, so great. So great. So what makes it all worth it for you? Because it's, you know, I actually was on the phone with you. I had a cousin that was struggling at a time, and you and I got on a call about it. And you asked me, you know, so where is he at? What has he lost? And so I told you what he'd lost, and you're like, excellent. You responded, excellent. Right. And it was just such a beautiful thing, because you were like, oh, that's so terrible that he went through that loss. But you were right away on such a high note with the whole thing. And, you know, so you obviously get a lot of energy for this work. What is it that makes it worth it for you to have gone through all this hardship and then turn around and go through it again with others?
Purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's our experience. So, you know, I'm sure you'd give the same answer. I mean, why do you want to help others who've gone through cancer? It's mm-hmm. the elixir. And it's my purpose in life. Like, all things in preparation. I could see it now. It's a whole life. Even though I identify as an alcoholic, Beth, today I'm not just that. And I see a lot of people get stuck. And that might be their path, but they get stuck and they're an alcoholic for 30 years. And, you know, it's just, I decided to grow out of that or expand. And I'm, you know, there's a purpose out there for all of us, mm-hmm. you know, and they change. Like right now, current events, I can see my purpose in this. I can.
Nice. Yeah. Do you want to say a little bit? You want to say a little bit about that? Because you were at the rally last night. I've been meaning to ask you how that went.
People aren't prepared for what's coming. Most aren't. Mm-hmm. We are.
Yeah.
We can accept change. We can move. We can flow. We're open-minded. We do a lot of research. We have a fellowship. You know,
yeah.
A lot of this in the last 9 years, when James True comes out with the best apocalypse ever, or Andrew Kaufman comes out with what he's seen, you know, each one of us fall into these rabbit holes. We're going in different directions, but we're able to fast track and move where others aren't. Mm-hmm. Fear's a reality. Most of my courage comes from encouragement from others, but, you know, in those rare moments I am courageous, you know, most of the time I'm just like anybody else. I'm experiencing the fear. I have a family. I have all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of the unknown. You know, that was, I wrote on that on a step work for many years, and that's natural. But our fellowship and the kind that have come about us, you know, we're the ones who can help a lot of people through that. That's when we're at our best. When things are at their worst, on the hero's journey, we're at our best. I mean, that's my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
My children are my purpose. I can't accept the world that they have set forth. That's not an option, guys.
Exactly.
I'm not going to order off that menu. There's no way.
Exactly.
And they know it, you know. But if you want to know how I feel about it, just keep moving forward, everybody. Keep working together. That hope is so important. You know, yesterday was a pretty rough day for me. Just because three chickens of mine, I lost three birds.
Aw, so sorry to hear.
Yeah, I know. Why? Who cares about their birds? I do. And, you know, why am I gardening? Shouldn't I be out on the front line? Well, I went out there. It's not It's nothing like the TV is showing. We could see things that other people couldn't, and I don't have anybody to talk to with about that. You're gonna have to see for yourself. Just have some faith that all things are in preparation, and that this journey has prepared us for what's unfolding today. I have a great faith in my Creator and my fellowship today, right now, after speaking with you, Beth. I do.
Incredible.
And a lot of these live streams, everybody's doing. You know, well, here's my son. Hold on, he just got back from
the cabin.
The cabin. Daddy's on a phone call. Do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi.
Hello. Hi. Oh, so nice to meet you. I've seen pictures of you.
It's all that. You want to talk about it after I'm off my phone call?
Yeah. Can I have my gun back?
You gonna help Grandma take your stuff in?
Yep.
I have been blessed with a 100% boy.
Love it. That's so great.
He's my reunification.
Mm-hmm. He's very lucky to have you as a father. That's amazing.
Well, you would know. You had a child at an interesting time of your life too.
I sure did.
For a blessing.
Yep. Yeah. They keep you straight like nothing else will. If you don't have the
motive. Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you don't have the motivation to mature and grow up and heal and get past your shit and all that, then your children are going to give you a very big invitation to do that. It's not a given. You see lots of people hold on to their shit, no problem.
Yeah.
But you get a daily invitation one way or another.
Oh, boy, that's a good one. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned my selflessness. I mean, through working with addicts, and I was able to apply it all over. And I think we did that off. Was it 2 weeks ago? We had the if anybody's listening, you know, with Beth and her book and work and everything, this hero's journey, it's great to look at the 12 steps and see it apply in your life. But you know, you present us the stages and the different archetypes. I'm just blown away. I think we were talking about the rebel the one day. I had no idea that there was the two types you present us, the awakened rebel and the sleeping rebel. I've been both, the nurturer. And that was the last one. That was great because I'm like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm blessed with two lives in one. I mean, I really have had to learn so much in the last 9 years, just like from scratch,
mm-hmm.
which is a blessing, but then it's a great challenge at the same time. And to be a nurturer is, I need help with that. You've helped a lot, especially with your work on the archetypes. I had some, you know, big breakthroughs with that.
I'm so glad. Yeah, that's the hallmark of the men in my world. Generally, the king heroes, they are really powerful nurturers. And that seems like a feminine quality, but it's not. It's a human quality to want to turn around and give others and help others get past the things that you used to struggle with. But on the other side, there are a lot of pitfalls for those nurturers. And in fact, that's exactly why I asked you now, because we were in that nurturer season of the Journey Archetype Study Groups. And I know you give a lot, like really a lot. And I've seen you make heroic moves for others, you know, like drive across the country and just drop everything and spend all your money to go and be part of somebody else's vision. And,
yes.
You know, how do you manage that? How do you come out of it on the other side without crashing?
Uh-oh, I think I lost you again.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Beth.
Okay.
Well, I'm not sorry. You're breaking up. Hold on. I think you're coming back.
Okay. How does it sound now? So we might be losing Aaron for a moment here. And I'm just going to remind myself, I asked him about how he avoids the crashes for those nurturers. Because it's a really big thing when you have a ton of energy and you've got that, you know, you've got the skill behind you. Every time you've been brave enough to overcome something big in your life, then you gain that power and that strength. And then you want to give it to everyone. You want everyone to have that same breakthrough you did. And you can go all day long doing nothing but serving other people. And there's nothing exactly wrong with it. But if you get to the end of the day and you don't have what you need and you don't have your own needs met, you didn't maybe eat a meal, or you didn't drink a glass of water, or you didn't get support for something that you needed, there will come a time where you feel totally burnt out. You will probably reject everybody and hope that they get away from you. And you'll be in immense pain because you're not actually fulfilling your role as a nurturer in that context, right? Nurturers have to help. You can't just say, no, I don't feel like it. Let's see. I think Aaron might be back. Hello. There you are.
Oh, yeah.
We can even see you this time. Nice.
We'll talk about it after the phone call. So I need to know right now. Pecker passed away over the weekend.
Oh.
He did.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We'll talk about it.
What did he die from?
Well, I mean, we'll talk about it. Daddy's on the phone. You going to be okay? I know. You want to talk about it afterwards?
Do you want to take a minute, Aaron? I totally don't mind.
Oh, I told you this was a tough day. Oh, no, it's okay. Okay. It'll be fine. He's
okay.
A tough kid.
Okay. Very good.
He wants to ride his bike. Get your bike. Thank God for short attention standing to him.
Yes, we were just talking
I'm
about that.
Take
Looks like we lost him again. So yeah, just talking about that nurturer archetype and how it's easy to fall down. I missed a comment here by Effie. I'm still a little worried. Oh, he's back. Hello, hello.
Yeah, that's the ghost in the machine again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to become suspicious. A lot of people complain about them messing with. I've got a great service where I'm sitting.
Right, right. Wow, wow. I know I've had mysterious break-ins of strange things. When I interviewed Oli Dumegard, it was they busted in with, they swarmed our live with porn, live porn. It's like, you don't want to see that stuff. Yep. It was awful. It was like,
that
whoa.
Was a great interview.
Thank you.
Old Dumegard was there for me in a very special time. In 2016, I had sponsored a guy who's now deceased, so it's okay. But he was a former Marine who trafficked heroin in Afghanistan. And what he told me in his fourth and fifth step, because this is the thing that troubled him the most, was that DynCorp and Evergreen Airlines planes is what they were loading them onto and flying them directly to the U.S. So at that night, I went home to my motel because I was working at a time, and I put on an old Dumegard was doing an interview, and he was sharing his experience of going on some field investigations and finding Evergreen Airlines and talking about how they are using those that company, which used to be Air America, for human trafficking, which is another story. And that's confirmation, because you'll think you're going crazy. You want truth, hold on to your butt, you're going to find it. And when you do, the experience sometimes is, oh my God, do I really want to know this? And old Dumegard has been great and creative and amazing and sharing his experience furiously for men like myself when I encounter situations such as that, because it really is happening.
Unfortunately. Yeah, I was reflecting. I was reflecting earlier about the possibility of doing a panel at like the next archetype that's coming up in my book that we're going to do the archetype study group with four is the lover archetype. And truthers may not realize it, but the lover archetype is a major subject in the truth world because that's the deepest desire. In fact, once as a nurturer, you overcome the problems with boundaries and you manage to look after yourself in the process of looking after others, then it graduates you to this next phase of the journey, which is all about putting your truth and your beauty out into the world and taking an unrelenting stand for truth, a truth or bust. So you will, you know, like Oli says that, it's your friends and your family that you have to battle in that truth war. It's not a bunch of strangers. It's the people around you, closest to you, that often are the ones. I know, last night I was actually going to do a video. I mean, I was actually just going to record myself. I was just playing with my mic and I was going to do a little recording. And I thought, you know what, just hit the live button. I had a feeling. I didn't even know why. Just hit the live button. And then there was somebody who'd been having a real hard time with their family over all of this stuff. But they're stand for the truth, and it's not going to be something that they're stepping down from just for the sake of the fact that their partner isn't really comfortable with it, you know. So it's quite a job that you guys are doing out there. Thank you for that, everybody who's engaged in that. We lost Snake again, so we'll have to definitely do this again. But what was the other thing I was going to share? The porn had better stream quality than we did, Benjamin. Yeah, how funny. I'm going to have to put that up. Hello, Benjamin. Nice to see you. So glad you're here. It's awesome. Here comes Aaron again. I don't know what it is. Even our wind is down here. I don't think it's our weather at all. Yeah, the porn was crystal clear for some reason. They had amazing connections. Can you hear me, Aaron? Are you there? He's having a hard time coming through. So yeah, one thing that I was going to say while we're waiting for Aaron's connection to come back on is that the people in the truth world might be of fewer numbers than those who want to continue to nurture that illusion that we're in. But the energy of the truth movement is so incredibly high. It's, for just even the reason that they're willing to look at hard stuff, like Aaron was just saying. And you need the nervous system for that. And if you don't have the nervous system, you're going to have to build that up. And you're going to have to allow that stuff to betray you and wound you. It's a sad reality of it. There's no getting past it. If you don't allow it to betray and wound you, then there's really no way to get to this other phase of the journey where you are putting your heart and soul out and you're listening to your deep soul's purpose, as Aaron is saying. Here he comes again. Hey there. Can you hear us, Aaron?
I'm listening.
Very good. Excellent. Yeah, so I was just finishing up talking about the lover archetype.
Not giving up.
Stand for truth. Excellent. I love it. You got that stick-to-itness that king heroes always do. So how do you
got it too? Everybody's got them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. I mean, in this community, we're supporting each other in that, right? Like I have often felt like I found my community, but now it feels like I just found it 5 minutes ago, because I can, right? Because I can suddenly be myself. I can have this incredible just transparency. I'm not trying to be something that I'm not. I'm not wondering like, oh, can these people handle it? How much of me can they actually, stomach or whatever it is? I'm never too much in this world. I'm never too much in my own world. That helps. So
yeah, I heard some of that.
Oh, good. Oh, good. That's
good. I know, I'm sitting here and you sound like a robot in a pool. I'm like, oh, this is so good. This is they participated in this, the nurturing, all that.
Yeah, so it's such a big thing. It's so easy to crash. Have you ever crashed in that nurturing role? Have you ever fallen right down in it?
Yeah, you just explained it earlier. What I could hear, I was like, oh, she's telling my story. And it's compassion fatigue, whatever you want to name it. And
yeah,
I'm the guy asking myself all the time, am I actually doing this thing? And I had someone remind me, if you're asking yourself that, you're on the right path. Because, sometimes it doesn't feel like it. And with nurturing, I took my shirt off my own back for so long because people were dying, like literally dying.
Yeah.
And then you discover, it whittles you down to a point where you're just no longer helpful anymore. Mm-hmm. My axiom is the most helpful I'll ever be to anybody else is by actually doing this thing myself. That's everything. So I know myself well enough today. I mean, I've gotten that far that if there's an intuition or something that says, Aaron, you need to do this, you do it. And it, the sacrifice is stepping away from what you feel is the main work, which is working with Alcoholics and Addicts there for a time, but there's much more. And you find out that way. My home is very important to me. You know, I've been spending a lot of time in the garden and putting my feet in the dirt. Just like, and when James True starts talking about that stuff, the results are amazing. They're for real. So there'll be a time when I'm called out of the garden. This warrior will not be in the garden. And when that comes, you know, God willing, I'll find myself in the place that he finds me most useful for him. And just like any man would want. So, but when it comes to being a nurturer, you know, that stuff kind of, you're a parent now, you're all these things, and it's a real fear. What if I can't provide for my family? Well, I'll tell you what, going all the way back to when I started this whole thing, sharing with you guys, even living out of a backpack for 2 years, two drawers, I had, everything was provided for me, everything. If I cut my finger, I didn't have a Band-Aid on me, I'd look on the ground and there'd be a Band-Aid mysteriously there in its package. Stuff like that.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that.
And you build out from there. I'm always, it's always there. Opportunities, if I, to provide for, if it's authentic and all that stuff, it's always there. So, you know. But yeah, I can't constantly take the phone back. I learned that.
Sorry, I interrupted you. You can't constantly what?
Oh, I learned this, you know, take the saying of, you know, take your shirt off your back, give it to anyone, whatever. And yeah, always giving, always giving.
Right. You know? Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a rock and a hard place for that nurturer. They have to figure it out because the will to help and serve is so big. And at the same time, if you're practically crumbling under your own efforts to help others, then there's nothing. You have nothing and your people have nothing. And it's a full stop. So many people resort to a big pendulum swing. They go from helping everyone to helping no one. And then they're equally in misery because that you literally will feel purposeless from that place.
Yeah, I learned a lot from the Hope meetings. And since I can hear you, those moms and dads taught me more than I could have, any book could have, real life experience. And you know, I watch a lot of parents love their kid to death. It's a reality.
Oh, say more about that.
Well, where do I start? I mean, when it's great to have these support groups because it's a place to meet. It's a place to get started, a place to find out where you're at. You know, you had mentioned earlier how I asked you all those questions. Well, I learned that from out there in the field. I had to learn that all on my own. You get information real quick and know how best to help somebody. But I'm trying to figure out what relationship this addict has with that enabler. There's always one, you know, and there's where the separation needs to occur in some degree. So back to the Hope moms and stuff like that. That's how they are. They're so wore out. They're so insane. We have a saying, you know, any alcoholic in the family will make anyone insane. It's a family illness. And, you know, that's what I was saying. That's what I saw in my first meeting. I saw these parents were obsessed with trying to figure out a sick person, and it made them sick, made them very sick.
Right.
And immediately being an example of a healthy person, eliminating the excuse, showing them that there's a way out, that there's a solution, and giving them the basic fundamentals, they were able to, that's the work. You're trying to get them better. And I would always, I have plenty of axioms I use so that they can be in a healthy state. When that time comes, they can make that right decision. I kind of share with you, my father, California, you know, it worked. He just got tired of seeing me hurt the people he loved. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another indicator. So yeah, these nurturers, and these mothers are amazing. These parents are amazing human beings. Mm-hmm. They really do tap into what it means to be a mother. And then somewhere along the line, it just went in the wrong direction and they're stuck. Mm-hmm. And you know, it leads to the ultimate worst case scenarios, that tragic succumbing to the illness of addiction and permanent insanity. So, yeah, the nurturer thing is really important to me, and you've given me new tools and new outlook on that one specifically. Things, you know, you would think someone with 9 years of experience of doing this, but no, but I didn't. So, and that applies in my own personal life and in ways I can help others. You know, that gets exhausting as well sometimes, because with these parents and stuff, if I don't have the tools to help their children, that would be sober livings, treatment centers and stuff like that. Just basic resources. It's very frustrating. I can't. There was a time we were sending people out of state all over the place just to get them somewhere, you know.
Wow.
St. Louis is not the place to be. I'm sorry. There's some amazing little magical places here and there, but if you're in St. Louis and you have, get out of here, just take your family and leave. That's where I'm at right now. It's pretty bad. But
wow.
Because that's what I would support, though. If you can get a parent or a nurturer back on track with nurturing and a healthy mind, they make good decisions and they have a good journey when it comes to recovery, because they recover too. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of those in book meeting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, having powerful boundaries is good for everybody. It's good for you, and it's exactly the thing that the person you're trying to help needs from you. Right. In fact, you could say if there's one thing that they need from you, it is your good boundaries. So it's a beautiful thing to be constantly looking at where you can clean up on that.
Yeah, boundaries are important. And I don't want to go too in depth and accept that, yes, boundaries are very important. I can tell you this. It's been 7 years almost now. 90% of the heroin addicts that are succumbing to this illness, having accidental overdoses, it's happening in grandma's bathroom or basement or mom and dad's house. It's not happening out in the streets, guys. It's not happening in a dope house. It's happening in your own home. And it's just a tragic reality. And, you know, it takes a very special group of people to tell another. Imagine if you tell a parent you have to kick your kid out of the house, get a restraining order. It's what a challenge. You know, that's what we have to do a lot of the times.
Mm-hmm.
That's that alchemical separation. It's that first stage. You separate, you purify, and reunification is guaranteed.
Oh my.
Every time.
Oh my. That's so good to hear. That's powerful. I love how you're tying that in with the alchemy. Nice. Yes, go ahead.
No. I mean, the archetypes too. You're gonna introduce that. It's all there, Beth. The hero's journey, every bit of it. And that's another thing. You know, if I was only left to AA, that's where I would be. And there's nothing wrong with that. But because of the work that you have done, and others, I've been able to expand and add to my tools. You know, I think right now where we're at really is I've found myself in a position where I'm really having to meet people where they're at. I'm not always able, as I'd wish, to apply these new tools because people still aren't really ready for them. Which is kind of frustrating because I'm really wanting to work with these new tools. And, you know, people are like, what the hell are you talking about? So it's like, okay, back to basics. But that time's coming. I mean, this is the 100th monkey kind of deal. This is the evolution of us. You know, the world's ready for this. And if we continue to do the work and bring this forward, it'd be just like, you know, the introduction of Alcoholics Anonymous in the 30s, which is an amazing book. That's what AA is. It's just a book.
Mm-hmm.
What people make of it is up to them. But, you know, write a book, put out your stuff. It's great. I love it. I'm looking forward to the future when we, again, I guess, clean up all the wreckage that these people are going to create. It's a good opportunity, really. It is. We can do what we do.
Yeah, it's such a great reminder that we're giving each other on a daily basis. Like you said, that people who've tapped in with Truth Community, they're at a different level. Their energy is very high. When you have the courage to look at that hard stuff and you get through to the other side and you shake off that denial and fight the fight that's in front of you that you wanted to avoid, or, you know, learn how not to fight as a warrior to really save your energy. But, you know, I was saying earlier, I'm not sure if you heard this, but we might be smaller number, the people who are really looking truth in the face and actively digging and wanting to know more than they know. And they're glad when they're wrong, right? Like they're actually glad that they get some new information that they didn't have. And
absolutely,
you know, and you don't need to be discouraged that it's smaller numbers, because when you're vibrating at that level with the truth, there is, you know, almost infinitely more energy behind it. So you're not just comparing people, and it's just like you say, Snake. I think we're going to see this all of a sudden. You know, it's going along like this, and all of a sudden, it's just going to do this. We're going to have this. I don't know if you could see what I'm doing, but you know, steep curve. It's gonna go up.
Yeah.
Because you know, if you're brave enough to raise your energy the way that you are. And a lot of the people in this world, then your very being becomes the invitation for people to rise up. Now, of course, it always at the same time becomes the invitation for them to fall away.
Yeah, climbing a mountain's intense.
Yeah.
You come over a hill to a mountain, you're like, oh, you got to move.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's beautiful. That's great wisdom. I'm thinking about earlier when you were talking about you chose not to die on a certain hill. We were looking for the words.
That's it.
And there's a lot to that. Because, yeah, you can die on a hill real quick. Get your butt kicked.
Exactly.
You know, that's why. When you talk about going to the stores and your experience with your friends online and stuff, and I'm very sympathetic to that because everyone's experiencing that right now. And even just talking about any of it is good. It's frustrating, you know. Mm-hmm. Truth is my only nourishment. And it really is. It's the most nourishing thing in my life.
I love that. I'm right with you.
And well, my life goal to be old is still this full mystery, and I don't know. Old wise sage.
Aaron, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we are kind of losing the signal here. Are you guys having trouble hearing too? So just a little bit pixelated sound going on. Sorry to interrupt you. It sounded like it was really good energy, what you were saying. Are you still there, Aaron? Yeah, robot man. Yeah, darn it. Well, I'm happy we've got as much out of him as we have, and here he's going to come back. We're heading for the finale here. Hey, Aaron. So we're heading for the finish line, and we did just miss what you were saying for about the last minute. I don't know if you know or what you were saying or want to repeat that. And you don't seem to have sound for some reason also.
Yeah, my bad. I pushed the wrong button. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Am I going to respond to a question out of the chat?
Go for it if you...
Oh, which particular one?
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm misunderstanding. There's not a particular question exactly. Okay. If anybody has a question, please, yeah, you're just getting lots of props and talking about truth that, oops, I was going to say, Kiva said, we got to follow the truth crumbs being dropped on the trail, exactly. So then what... There's two more things I'd love to talk about if we have the time. I'm going to start with the bigger one. So what advice would you give to, say, young men or other men like yourself who maybe haven't really found their truth legs yet? Maybe they are battling with themselves about not saying the thing that they want to say. or, you know, they're falling down, helping others. What advice would you give them right now? Other King heroes in the making.
It's a whole life. Answer the call. And the mentor always appears. All that stuff unfolds. You might not see it, but you see it. And to hear someone else speak about it, all of a sudden it's like, yes. But it is a whole life. You know, I get a lot of guys, they're 20, they're 25, they're even 30, sometimes older. Hold on a second. That mower might be. But they think their life's over. You know, what more is there? Well, you know, a human lifespan is supposed to be 120 years. Even if it's 70 or 60, you know, we still have a whole nother life ahead of us. There's so much to learn. It's just like Steve said. What I would say to them, I was like, you know, reach out, listen. Remember, it's a whole life. And I came to that moment pretty quickly that everything that I experienced in my life, all that suffering, everything can be turned to good account. Mm. It can.
Boom.
And it's of great value.
That's amazing. And you know it. After a while, you've come through so many fires. And you got to the other side and you've seen other people come through so many fires and you see them get to the other side. And it builds this power and this faith that it's waiting for you. It's just a matter of, do you go through the door now or do you go through the door later? Yeah.
Yeah. You're breaking up, but I heard faith, which is good.
Faith is very good.
That takes a lot of work.
It sure does. You got a lot of booms in the chat here. There you go. Coming. Boy. Oh, here, I'll show the other one. There we go. Got the boom. So great. So do you want to try for one more question? Can you stand it?
I have time for questions. That's what you said, but you're breaking up so bad.
Yeah, fair enough. I hear you. Well, maybe we should save it and do it again.
I'm planning on getting some internet back in my house here soon. maybe even a new. If that's what it is, I still think it's a ghost in the machine. This is the stuff. This is the stuff that they really causes a certain it causes great fear for certain groups. They don't want this out. And that's just your basic faith, all that good stuff. So if you want to do it again, that's great.
Absolutely.
And I have available some light coaching. But just remember, I'm pretty intense. I'm going to – truth is that love and tolerance. You know, we love others by telling them the truth. We tolerate their actions afterwards. It's just kind of – I'm mad on the addiction thing. So, like, if you are struggling – if you're in that part of your life where, you know, you're looking for some solution or some kind of, you know, coaching through it or anything, some experience, just to talk, I'm available. But don't be too freaked out when I talk about the hero's journey and stuff like that. Because usually that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, your people are out there and they're ready for that kind of exact talk, hearing the truth and the more esoteric side of it as well. Your people are out there. I know they are. So, Aaron is available for coaching. So don't hesitate to knock on his door. I am going to post the link to, I'll ask him what is the best. Maybe it's his Facebook or Gmail or something like that. And, absolutely.
Say hello to him. Me and the website, whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say hi, connect with him. I know Aaron is extremely responsive when it comes to messages or anything that's, you know, like he said, this is his purpose. It's something that he is wired to help people in. And maybe we'll jump on another call like this and open up because I can actually take callers on this. So if that appeals to you, Aaron, we could do that as well.
So is this, we're going to wrap it up. I'm breaking up so bad.
Yeah.
I think we did good considering.
I think we did. Thank you so much for your patience Aaron, thank you so much for your patience with the audience. I'm so glad that you guys came this evening. It was literally a thrill for me. I love you guys so much. Every day I feel closer and closer to this community, and holding in mind that we can all be in person at some level too. Hey, wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh yeah. I second that.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
You just speak for me.
So good. So feel free to visit me at bethmartins.com if you'd like to have a reading of your King Hero's Journey archetype in 10 minutes. And doing my quiz, you'll find out where you are on the path of purpose. And you'll see what your main struggles are, what the big challenges are for you, but also what are the big gifts that are naturally there as a way to help you get to the other side and be part of that hero's journey where you not only slay your own demons, but you also give back. And so you can do that quiz, you get an instant result, and you can also apply to work with me one-on-one if you visit my website. Last, I'll let you know that my book Journey is available, and you just click the tab Buy Best Book. It's there as a hard copy. It's also there as a PDF. So if you wanted to get it the most affordably, that PDF is there for you. And I'm here for you. Please don't hesitate to reach out. The more we stick together, the stronger we all feel and can evolve and support each other through a very difficult time that is actually going to make us all incredibly strong. Do you feel it already? Like, wow, I'm a different person already than the, you know, was it 10 weeks ago that all this stuff started to blow up? So thank you so much. I've loved your comments and your presence. I honor your divine spark, knowing that it is the same divine spark in myself. So, bye, everyone. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your evening. Thank you so much. I'm the favorite mermaid. Yay. I'm going to put that up before we go. Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. Yes, Effie. If it helps, I can drop a link in the chat here too. I'm never that shy about stuff like that. Happy to teach anyone if you're looking to be less shy about what you have to offer and finding your value. Then that's right up my alley. Absolutely. So here, I'll just drop the link before I say goodbye. And on that note, love you guys. Have a great evening.